Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can all go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, when the store is quiet, I get to watch movies and series and talk about them with my friends that work here. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop.
Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV?
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Howdy.
How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you for asking.
Why so good?
I'm not as sick as I was last week.
Oh, cool.
Nice.
Coming back from Europe had me a bit flu-y, but I feel a lot better. Good. I got some good rest. Welcome to the video store. Thank you for wandering into our beautiful video store. We've got ourselves a marigold here today.
Hello.
We're not working at the video store. You are a tattoo artist.
Yes, I am.
And an artist in your own right.
Yes.
We've got Cole with us today.
Hey.
How are you, bud?
I'm fine, dude.
Just fine.
Yeah, I'm okay. It's winter's over. I'm not happy about it.
You're not happy about it.
No, I'm like the fucking only South African in the world, apparently, that doesn't like summer.
You and me, bud.
Oh,
I don't like summer, but I got very over this winter.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It was inconsistent, man. That's the thing I hated about it. It's like hot, cold, hot, cold.
I recently moved to London, and there's just no insulation in the buildings.
Oh, no. When they're cold.
It's so cold. It's like 10 times colder than outside. So yeah. I'm just like, I
feel you.
Could do some warmth.
Yeah.
there were a couple of mornings this winter where I walked into 44 Stanley and they got a couple of wind passages in the early mornings.
They
and there
do,
were a few times where I was like, I'm 38. How do I fuck this up? I've done like 38 winters in Joburg. I've lived in Joburg my whole life. Like,
yeah.
How did I fuck this up? Yeah, like, bring layers.
It was
bring a
weird.
Jacket.
It was a weird winter because you couldn't as well. Because one day it would be super hot.
Yeah.
So you're like, that's fine. I don't need a jacket.
It's we're cool.
It's going to be boiling today. And then the next day is like, oh my God.
We're not working at the video store. Cole, you are a copywriter
and a freelance music video director sometimes.
Yeah, you just posted the Steve
that
video.
Let's save it for the hey guys, did you see?
Okay, cool. All right. And my name is Russell, and we're not working at the video store. I own The Bioscope, which is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg, and this is our clerks chat. So this is the three of us behind the counter talking about all the movies and the series that we're watching. Left alone, no one bothers us early in the morning. So it's lovely to chat with you guys. All right, we're going to kick things off with a little round of hey, did you guys see?
Cool.
Do you want to kick it off, Cole?
I'll kick it off. Hey, did you guys see that two video store regulars, what do you call them, loyal customers?
Yeah.
And two video store clerks released a music video this week. And
lovely. Tell us all about it.
So 2 years ago, October 2022, we shot a music video for Steve Ulo.
Okay, shout out to Steve, who's been on the show. That's what we mean.
Yes.
Yeah.
And cinematographer Gavin Pincus.
Who's also been on the show. Okay, magic. Mm. Okay.
Yeah, and Steve had a single called We're All Right. And what he did after that was he basically designed this huge campaign around TikTok that's done very well for him.
Okay.
And decided that the music video that we finished editing at the start of 2023 was going to be his final single, which was this weekend. So we waited like a year and a half to release our music video, which was kind of annoying. But now that it's out, it's cool to show the world what we did.
The final single of an album?
Yes.
Not his final single
ever. Final single of an album.
Okay.
Yeah,
because that's a long time to wait.
It is a long time to wait. But it's been a good release strategy for him, from what I know.
Do you remember when Short Straw did that really dumb thing? It was a good idea at the time, which was that we were going to release one song a month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For a year.
Yes.
And we went into that year with about 6 songs already done. Mm-hmm. So we're like, we're cool. We're like halfway there. We'll be fine.
Yeah.
But then we realized, probably similar to Steve, that there's 1 or 2 songs that we want to strategically put at like the end or the last song. So we were sitting with material that we could have released, but then we didn't have something in 1 or 2 months.
Mm.
And we like wrote, recorded, put out.
Wasn't there some drama that happened?
No,
with the art.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Let's talk about it.
No. That was that much drama. No, there was one. So what we did, the point was to give each song its time.
Yeah.
And that was the failing of the project, because one or two songs need more time if they're going to be your singles. They've got to like live for longer. You can't like a month later go, here's a new one.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that you identify a few songs and push them as singles. And then, mm-hmm. of course, some get lost. But we were trying to give each song its time.
Yeah.
And so each song had a music video and each song had an artwork that was done by a different artist.
Yeah.
And then the whole idea was that all these people were collaborating on, be it like the choreographer of the music video or the guy who shot the video.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, the whole idea was that they were all part of this collective.
Yeah.
And so we were then going to try and amplify and push this collective. Mm. And the whole concept album was called Those Meddling Kids.
Yeah.
So all these people were meddling kids. But yeah, one of the artists... submitted an artwork that we loved,
mm-hmm.
And then we discovered through the internet
that
it was very much a copy.
Yeah,
it was like a sort of a very, very similar to someone else's work.
Yeah,
and we of course didn't know until we saw the original, and we're like, oh god, this is, you know, it's a very different work, but it was very much taken from this other person's work.
And we
met this absolute stranger through the internet and was like, we're so sorry. Can we use your artwork?
Yes.
How do we make this right? Yeah. Can we use yours? And so it actually had this kind of happy ending.
Yeah. You did end up using.
Where we did end up using her original artwork.
That's awesome.
But the best part about this whole story is that it made like the newspaper.
It did, yeah. That's how I know of this. That's why I was like, hey.
But the best part is that the article itself was on sort of page 3 or 4 of the Times. There wasn't enough space for a picture on the page 3 or 4, but they used a picture on the front page to allude to like band has blunder with artwork forgery or something like that.
Yeah.
Some clickbaity thing. But they used a picture of Desmond in the tutus. It's so funny.
No way.
We often get confused. You know, sometimes fans are like, oh yeah, my favorite song is. And we're like, no. That's tutus. A very similar in spirit indie rock band here in South Africa. And so it was so funny sending this, like a picture of this to Shane from Desmond and the Tutus and going, what did you guys do? Fuck. No, but okay. So this music video is out.
Yes. So it's out. Edited.
And you said, who's the fourth? Did Graham help edit it?
Yeah, Graham edited it.
Okay. Because Graham, who's also on the show, is an editor. Okay. And so you directed it.
Yeah. So it's my idea. I directed it.
It's your vision.
Okay, I'm pretty happy with this. Yeah.
Lovely, man. Well done.
It's a very cool little experiment.
Yeah. It's cool that you get to still do that stuff.
No, totally.
Yeah. Even if it is 2 years ago.
All
right. Did you guys see Kinds of Kindness is now on Disney Plus?
Okay.
Do you know?
I've heard of Kinds of Kindness.
I did. It popped up like, it's like a collage-y.
Yes.
Yeah, image.
So.
Yeah. It popped up. What you mean.
Yeah, it's like.
the visionary director, Yorgos Lanthimos.
Yeah.
You actually can't say his name without really like embellishing it.
Yeah.
Yorgos Lanthimos has become more and more of an Oscar darling.
Mm-hmm.
Most recently this year with Poor Things, which was the beautiful, you know, work of art.
Which I still haven't seen.
You haven't seen it?
Yeah.
That's so
good. It's like good Tim Burton is my review.
Mm.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
but good?
And,
Watch it.
Sorry.
And it was this big, wild, bold swing of a film, and kind of shortly after it sort of had its time, there was this like, oh, he's got another film, and it's going to play at Cannes. Very similar actors as well. Jesse Plemons is in it.
Yes.
And Emma Stone is in it.
Yeah.
But Lanthimos is weird. It's art house. It's pushing the boundaries of the form.
Mm.
And I don't think it was ever going to perhaps work in mainstream cinemas in South Africa. So we never got it. And then now it's just kind of snuck in to Disney Plus. So
did you watch it?
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay.
I want to watch it. It's going to be a bit odd.
Do you think it would be like potentially able to screen at the Bioscope?
At this point, I think we've lost its window.
Okay.
Now that it's up for streaming.
Yeah.
But it's what I understand it to be is it's going to be three different stories.
Okay.
Oh.
I saw it said anthology.
Yeah. I think it's like a film of three films.
Okay.
We love those. Mm. Like Vengeance Trilogy or something
Yeah. I think, it's going to be cool.
Mm, I'm curious.
So yeah. I think it's definitely worth people's time, especially if you are the kind of person that came to the Bioscope to watch Poor Things.
Or,
you know, you do seek out the more artistic films.
Mm.
It's nothing like Poor Things. Poor Things was this crazy, beautiful sort of fairy tale, you know, fantasy. But it's just cool to see that it just popped up.
Right.
Have you got one?
I do. It's a little bit niche, but it's very... I'm so excited.
Okay.
And hey, did you guys see the trailer for season 3 of From?
From?
It's like my favorite show.
Okay.
It's literally my favorite show.
No,
it is
I don't know anything
so
about it.
Good. I think I have spoken about it on the podcast before, but it is one of the scariest shows I've ever seen.
Okay. Oh, heck so.
It is.
You tend to seek out the scary.
I like spookies, but good spooky, you know. And I started watching this last year, and I think I did speak about the podcast, but the basic is a family is in an RV. They're taking a road trip or whatever, and they turn around the corner and they see a tree. So they go back and loop around, and they start going in circles, and that's basically about it to start it. So they get stuck in this place.
Stumble
on a town.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't want to give too much about it.
American. Set in the now?
Oh my God, the poster is terrifying.
It's scary. The monsters are, when they're monsters form, they're not. I don't want to talk about the monsters. I gave that away.
Well, but they're monsters.
Give me.
Okay, there's monsters. Okay.
There's
monsters.
Set
in the now.
Set in the now. But okay. They go into this town, and it's where people can't leave this town. And there's some monsters in it, and it's very scary.
It's like Hotel California.
What's that?
You can check in anytime you like, but you can never leave.
Yeah. You can't leave this place. And season 3, when I finished it, I was so mad. I finished season 1 and 2 and I was so mad because I was like, I just want to know what happens. And there's so much lore as well in it, which is like my alley, when there's like backstory to the town and what's going on and the people who were there, the first round of people who were there, because it's practically impossible to survive in this town.
Okay. Where is it?
It's on MGM Plus.
Yeah.
Okay. So MGM. Do you go out into the wide,
I do.
The wide, wide world, world to go find it?
It is on Prime if you know how to get to.
If you know how to get it.
We've been streaming it on Prime, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Wait, is it on South African Prime?
No, it's not.
Okay, it's on American Prime.
If you know how.
If you can deceive the bots. No, but that's cool, and it sounds like a great show.
It's amazing. I've recently, my boyfriend Klaus and I are rewatching it because season 3, the first episode, is coming out on the 22nd of September.
Okay.
So I'm like, okay, cool, you have to watch all of this.
I love that kind of show. I did that for every single season of The Crown.
Yeah.
So when 4 came out, I watched 3 seasons of The Crown again. Yeah. For like the fifth
Game
time.
Game of Thrones, every time a new season would come out,
exactly,
I would rewatch
the whole show. Yeah. I love those.
Oh, wow. I haven't done that. I should.
It's great.
Good. It's good.
It is a good way to do it.
And you find out little things as well, because From has so much lore and so many secret things about this town. Like, there's certain numbers that you got to pay attention to that show up in little parts of the town, because that has something to do with the story.
Oh, I love that.
Okay, so it's not
it
a...
It sounds like Lost.
It's by the directors of Lost.
Oh, yeah. I'm watching it.
Yeah.
I'm watching it. I'm
it's
there.
It's amazing.
See, but now I really want to rewatch Lost.
I'd say it's better than Lost. And I love Lost. I love Lost. I'd say it's better.
I love our crew. We have Gad, we have Marigold, we have me. All people with impeccable taste.
Hey.
We're not just like, oh, but the final season wasn't even real. Meh.
No.
Fuck off.
No, I love Lost.
It's amazing.
I used to have a box set.
Oh, same.
Yeah.
I have it all on DVD.
Yes, yeah, same.
Yeah, all the
yeah.
season.
Yeah, the little box set.
And I have a little John Locke figurine of him staring over the hatch. Because I'm like, it's the most profound philosophical images.
Where was I?
I don't know, dude.
I was outside playing cricket.
No.
This is what he did to Graham and I once. He said, when we were talking about playing RPGs.
Yeah.
And we were having so much fun talking about RPGs. Russ is like, yeah, sorry, I was busy talking to chicks.
Oh, man.
It's a defense mechanism. I secretly wish I had a more geeky life. No, it sounds like a show I should have watched. So,
Lost and yeah. also Please Watch From. But it is terrifying. Like, yeah. these monsters are... It's not even... Like what I was going to say is not even when they're in full monster form that's scary. That's not scary to me. It's... Because they transform.
With like people as monsters.
They're people as monsters. Oh. And when they're people, there's one guy. He's always in there. Yeah. And he actually plays a big role in the story later on. And that one monster is on the poster as well. And he is disgusting. Like when I see him, I'm like,
ugh.
I want to just Hell. Like, yeah, he's so scary.
Jesus. Okay.
Sleepless Ooh, nights afterwards.
Yeah, I was about to say, this isn't a full asleep show. This is the opposite.
It's not.
This is the like keep you up.
I had
all
many
nights
of staying up because I couldn't sleep. I was so anxious.
Oh, and it's the lead actor is the guy from Lost.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, Harold Perrineau.
It's also got there's
who played Link in The Matrix Reloaded, and if anyone doesn't know. Yeah?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He was that boy's father in Lost.
Yes. And Mercutio in Romeo plus Juliet.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, the Baz Luhrmann one.
Yeah.
Mm, yeah. He was great.
He's so good in that.
He's a wonderful actor.
The like vision that I always stuck in my head, because we watched it in cinema, Romeo plus Juliet, my mom and I, is the like when he's doing Young Hearts Run Free and he's dancing down the stairs. That's like... Ingrained
in your brain.
Love it.
It's such a great role as well.
So beautiful.
And it's such a good example of how supporting actors sort of just get the best roles you only come up when it's needed, yeah. when it's funny, when it's whatever. Like you maybe wouldn't want to watch a whole movie of him.
Yeah.
Mercutio. But yeah. he's just the perfect sort of complimentary
so
character
beautiful.
To the straight man of Romeo.
Yeah. So beautiful. Wow.
Lovely. Have you got one, Cole?
Hey, did you guys see that May Fokma release is being made into a movie?
I did. I saw a little Times.
Yeah, a little headline.
Yeah, a little headline.
I have no idea what the plot's about, but I think it's the family's broader problems. I think it might be a drama.
Okay.
And it's directed by Brett Michael Innes.
He's done a lot.
Yeah, who worked on To Catch a Killer.
Yes.
He did two episodes of that.
Yes. Mm. Very competent
and
director.
Fila Sekund.
Mm.
Mm. So, yeah.
Okay, May Fokma release is our little viral video.
Our darling meme.
Our darling meme from South Africa, where a little girl is learning to ride a bicycle
on a rugby field.
And has got this huge amount of field space, but for some reason takes this very slow ride straight towards the pole, hits the pole in her bicycle, and the mom commentating just goes, "May fuck my release." Like, fucking hell. I met someone the other day, I can't remember the scenario, but her name was Marilise, and I was like, "How's that working out for you?" She's like, "Not good." Not good. So every Marilise in South Africa has now... you know, got this meme to deal with. How do you make a whole movie out of like a second moment?
No, but it's the family's broader story.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the May Fokma release might just be a scene.
Sure.
Okay.
And I don't know if they should make it a scene. I don't know. Let's see what they do with it.
All right.
Because I think it'll be pretty lame when it gets to that moment. So you're like, oh, there it is.
Or some people will like... You know.
Yo!
Ooh.
Oh.
That's so weird. I got one.
Well, everyone says it in unison in the cinema.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's such a small defeatist little comment.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not even like a big triumphant comment. It's like this like, oh, fuck.
We were having the chat the other day that like people have gone from like quoting movies to just quoting memes.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, like, yeah. I remember my best friends and I growing up, we would only speak in the script of Bridesmaids to each other.
Oh, lol.
Like, we'd be like, can George Glass do this to you? And just like, you know, we'd only speak in that. And now it's like everyone, like Seth and I, my best friend, we just speak in memes now. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hectic how much it's changed. I remember us being, I don't know how old were we? We would have been 11 when Shrek came out.
Yes.
And all the children are going around like on a hike being like, I like that boulder. That is a nice boulder.
That's so cute. That's what I loved so much about Fall Guy, was that the rapport between the stunt coordinator, the lead stunt coordinator, and Ryan Gosling's character was that they would speak to each other in movie quotes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they would have to sort of like do the impersonation and the other guy
it's
would
great.
Have to pick
it's,
it.
It's so great.
Yeah. Yeah. There's that little kid that wants to touch that bear. I want to. Can I pet that dog?
Can I pet that dog?
And there's this like little bear on the other side of the porch, and the mom's like pulling this kid away. Can I pet that dog? Leslie was so adamant, and I'm really glad she pushed it for us to go near Mount Etna when we were in Sicily. Now,
mm-hmm. Ooh.
This active volcano.
Yeah,
Leslie loves a good thrill in mm-hmm. that sense. And we made a joke about her going like, can I pet that lava? can I touch that lava? Funny, yeah. I've got a weird one. And then perhaps there's other sort of stuff we can talk about in more detail.
Yeah.
Have you guys paid any attention, there's a more longer one, to what's happening with Armie Hammer?
What is that?
Wait, is this that he's a cannibal?
Hey.
Oh, this is years old, Russ.
No, but I'm sorry. I just...
give me contact.
Okay.
Give me contact.
Hey, did you guys hear that Armie Hammer...
is a cannibal.
Has fantasies of being a cannibal.
Who is Armie Hammer?
So Armie Hammer is...
Call me by your name.
He's an actor. He played the twins in Social Network.
Okay.
And then when the dinner cloth got dusted off of all the sort of creepy men in Hollywood and the likes of Kevin Spacey and all of them sort of got exposed for the kind of creepy dudes that they are. Armie Hammer was one of them.
Okay.
Where, you know, he's this big, strong, like handsome guy. He was in Death on the Nile.
Mm. So Call Me By My Name, is he the...
He's
older
the
guy.
Object of affection.
Yes, he is.
Okay. Interesting because Timothée Chalamet was in a cannibal movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which one is that?
Bones and all.
And then, yeah, maybe Cole, you can help piece things together. But, when these sort of testimonies came out and when these sort of weird, creepy moments and interactions with women came out, it was revealed that he has a fantasy about cannibalism, which is wild. It's like, bro,
I have
fucking keep that to yourself.
Great segue.
Because if it's a fantasy, you know, Jesus, keep that to yourself. If it's real, I mean, oh my God, this guy should be charged.
Yeah.
But don't lean into that because that, you know, will certainly not get you any more work. Mm. Not that he deserves it. But okay, so I'm a bit late to the party in that.
Yeah, so basically there were some screenshots of chats that he'd had with fans or young women. Mm. And then within that there are these suggestions of, like, you know, the dirty talk?
Yeah.
That dirty talk contains
mentions
of eating and things.
I just watched a cannibal series.
Okay, cool. Is this your segue?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
On Prime, called The Horror of Dolores Roach, which I found out was a play as well.
Okay.
That they've turned. And it's kind of like a modern-day Sweeney Todd. And it's got a Latina cast, which is really awesome. And they, you know, go a lot about their, you know, their culture. And they start making people into empanadas. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Love me a good empanada.
It is crazy because she doesn't want to be a part of it, but she's also so deeply in it, you know. Okay. So she's a convicted felon and she gets out of prison.
Why are they eating people?
Well, this is what
you gotta find out.
She doesn't want to eat them, but she starts working in an empanada shop and...
Yeah.
people stop becoming the main ingredient, and people love it as well. Everyone's like, oh my God, what is this?
These are the best.
Yeah.
Oh shit. And what's it called?
The Horror of Dolores Roach. I watched it recently. Okay, yeah.
Wow. Is it a film?
It's a series.
Okay.
Yeah.
But speaking of, I guess, sort of weird, macabre, dark, kooky, weird.
Mm-hmm.
This week we're going to go watch Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
Yes.
Which is very cool.
I'm very excited.
So obviously next week's episode will be it in more detail once we've seen it. But you say, Marigold, you say that the original is one of your faves.
One of my favorites. I used to watch it all the time, religiously.
What is it that you love about it?
It's a childhood movie. Definitely. It's one of my puppy loves. I think we had it on DVD. I used to watch it religiously with my mum. I don't know what... I think there's certain scenes that were so incredibly important in my life. Like, I remember my grandfather used to sing the Banana Boat song with me. So that scene at the end when she's like floating and, you know, dancing and, you know, in the, that's Shake, 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 Sonora. But also the dinner scene where they're singing Banana Boat song. And I don't know,
this is linked
it's
to some
such
good
a magical film for me and my upbringing. Because I must have watched it when I was quite young. Which is quite a hectic film as well.
Somewhat, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I missed it when I was a kid, and then I only watched it for the first time as an adult, and was like, I get it. I could see why this is, you know, special.
It's so special to me. Everything. Like, I can also remember scenes so perfectly, like, you know, the town, the miniature of the town, and it starting like that, and them pulling the faces, and...
I think a lot of practical effects, and it sounds like Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, which is now the sequel, this long-awaited sequel, which is coming to cinemas from the 6th of September. And we are going to screen it at the Bioscope. It looks like the reports seem to be that it's a return to some form for Burton.
Because
people have said that recently he can be a little hit or miss.
Yeah.
If he plays too much in CGI, he can sometimes get a bit lost.
Mm.
But this seems to be a return to a more original, practical... effects driven, and people said that on set he was sort of giddy with excitement, and so I think it'll be good in that regard. Do you have anything to say on Beetlejuice, Cole?
Not really.
Yeah.
I mean I didn't watch it when I was a kid, probably because it was evil.
Yeah,
I wasn't allowed to watch it.
Yeah. Cole was a good Christian boy.
Yeah, I mean, like, something like that.
My mom showed me weird stuff.
That's
like
cool,
going back to like what I watched as a child. I was like, okay, well.
And that was mom's doing, huh?
Mom, like Rocky Horror when I was like 3. Like, you know.
Thanks.
But I always had to cover my eyes when Eddie gets chopped up. My mom would be like, it's tomato sauce, I swear.
I wonder why Alec Baldwin's not in the sequel.
I could maybe tell you.
Do you think it's because of that?
Because of the rust stuff?
I don't think it's because of
what
that.
What is
this? So Alec Baldwin obviously was in the original.
Yeah.
Now in the second... unlike,
I think it starts with his funeral, basically, based in the trailer. Starts with his character's funeral.
There is a funeral.
Because Moira's and her, like, mourning clothes.
Well, Alec Baldwin's currently in a little bit of a sort of PR turmoil, because he was on set of a movie many years ago called Rust, where they didn't handle the gun properly, the props gun.
The armorer didn't.
The armorer didn't you know, they didn't cover all the protocols of this movie gun, and it involved Alec Baldwin literally shooting a cinematographer and the cinematographer dying.
Oh my God!
And so, like, 20-something.
There's
woman.
Been a court case for the last few years about how guilty he is, because it's not just the fact that he was the. Because if he was just the actor, I think it can be quite simple. It's like, I got handed this gun, I shot it.
Yes.
But he was a producer, so I think he's more liable than just an actor.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, and I think the last thing that's come out was that he wasn't guilty, but it just changes things, you know. It's just like, it does affect your persona. It does affect things. I'm sure it's weighed on him.
That's horrifying.
Yeah, it's one of those, like, you know, you have these protocols on set for a reason.
Of course.
And I don't know how it got missed that day, but this is the reason why they exist.
Yeah.
I think he was exonerated.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Sorry, exonerated.
Yeah.
Interesting. Speaking of maybe the last thing to mention on sort of creepy, weird stuff.
I got so much.
Sorry. Oh, you got more. Okay, so that'll never end. That's fine.
It's me.
Last week, I had the opportunity to go to a junket for one of the big distributors of South Africa. Mm-hmm. I spoke about this about 2 weeks ago when it was another distributor. So this is the distribution company Empire, who handle a lot of Warner Brothers stuff, mm-hmm. and A24 and some smaller studios as well. And they have this junket for cinemas. Mm-hmm. So this isn't me in my kind of media capacity. A lot of the video store stuff, we get invited as media.
Yeah.
I then secretly use it as a chance to decide whether or not it should go to the bioscope.
Yeah.
But this is a chance to get a whole bunch of cinema owners together. So it's mostly New Metro, and I think there were some smaller other cinemas in the country that are similar to me. And we got a chance to see what's coming.
Okay.
Which is cool. Mm. I can't speak too much about it, which is unfortunate, because I was like, throughout the watching of this the stuff, I was like, oh my God, I can't wait to tell everyone at the video store. And at the end, she's like, by the way, you know, there's an embargo, like you can't speak about it. And then I went up to the lovely woman I deal with there, and I was like, what can I speak about? She's like, just be vague.
Okay.
So this is me being a little more vague. But there, a lot of this is very public. But there is a movie coming out next year that is done by Osgood Perkins, mm-hmm. who did Long Legs this mm-hmm. year. And it is an adaptation of a Stephen King book.
Ooh.
Or short story called The Monkey.
I've never heard of it.
Oh, hectic.
Mm.
Guy wrote a lot of books, though, yeah? Mm.
Yeah, so that's coming. And I just think it's worth planting a little seed, putting it out there in the world.
Check out the book as well.
Yeah, that's fun. You know, this is the thing, is that one speaks of, like, you can't talk about it or spoilers, but, you know, the book's out there for you to watch. Book, yeah.
Well, it's got Elijah Wood in it.
Yeah.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
And Theo James.
It looks really
interesting. He can be so creepy if he needs to be.
He can,
so creepy.
The other highlights of this, which I really got very excited about, is that we got shown a trailer for Mickey 17.
Mm.
Now, do you know about Mickey 17?
No, it rings a bell.
Okay, so at the start of the year, the Bioscope got the upgrade and we could now release these bigger films. And in that lineup, earlier this year, it was scheduled to be in March, but it got delayed because of the writer's strike. This is the next movie by Bong Joon-ho, the director of Parasite. This is the next film he chose to do after his Oscar-sweeping film, Parasite. It is based off the book Mickey 7.
Mm-hmm.
So I immediately found this book and I was like, I love the idea of me reading the book before the movie. That happens so rarely in life.
Yeah,
I really loved the book. I thought this was amazing. It's a very cool, unique concept. The story is in the future where we're colonizing planets. And in these missions, they have this very unique job, which is an expendable, which is a human whose DNA is copied or on file so that they can get them to do the craziest, most daring, most dangerous jobs so that they could make a new one if they have to.
Okay.
And this is played by Robert Pattinson in the movie. Okay, so
we
know this. All this information we know. I'm not telling you anything new. And then what happens in the basic premise of the book, which I don't want to then give more away, is that by mistake, there's now two of them.
Mm.
So everyone thinks he's dead, so they make a new Mickey. He then comes home and discovers his next Mickey.
Yeah.
And the two of them now have to kind of make it work. But it is not a silly action romp.
Okay.
It's a great play on, you know, who's real, what's real, you know, and it's very realistic in the sense that it's, you know, it's not just like everything can be done, everything's possible in the future. It's like there's real world, you know, constraints and issues. It's lovely. And I finished the book, realized Edward Ashton, who wrote the book, has got a website. The website was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
There was a contact page, and I was like, hi, I'm a cinema in Johannesburg. I've just finished Mickey 7. Is there any chance we can have a chat? And he responded.
Oh, amazing.
And so I have recorded an episode.
Exciting.
With this author who is on the cusp of having his story be like a huge,
massive,
big deal.
Yeah.
It's going to come out at the end of Jan next year.
Okay. Amazing.
Bong Joon-ho, like fucking the Bong Joon-ho.
Is
adapting your story.
Yeah.
Like your life is going to change, but he's got to like wait.
Yeah, for it.
For it to happen.
Amazing.
And he's the super smart, like really interesting guy. And I just love the fact that we've banked this episode, which I'm sitting and waiting with.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll release it when like tickets are on sale for so the movie is Mickey 17. Mm. So they obviously have taken some license and changed some things.
Mm.
But yeah, at this junket, I saw the trailer and I was like, this is going to be so cool.
Amazing.
It looked cool. It's Robert Pattinson. He sounds and is acting different to what you know him to be.
Mm-hmm.
But he only ever played this kind of one particular kind of thing with Twilight. Everything else he's been very much a character actor.
Yeah.
And he's been very good at all his other roles and he's made very interesting character choices. But yeah, Mickey 17 is coming and it looks cool.
Yeah, I'm hyped.
So yeah, that was the one. We also got shown more of Red One. Red One is coming now. It's the big Christmas movie. It is a it's very much a family sort of silly movie. It's all about Father Christmas being kidnapped.
Okay.
But they do it in a very fun 2024 way.
Okay.
So the basic setup is they play it. This whole movie plays out like it's a very serious, like Fast and the Furious.
Mm.
You know, like the characters are sort of taking it all very seriously.
It's Dwayne Johnson.
Okay. It's Dwayne Johnson. Like he's head of security for Red One. That's the code name for
Santa.
Santa's played by the dude from Whiplash.
J.K. Simmons.
J.K. Simmons.
Okay.
Lucy Liu recruits Chris Evans because he's a sort of bounty hunter or something. But it's charming. And I think what's interesting about it is it's very testament to 2024, where it's like, how do you make a Christmas movie now?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what could you possibly do that's different from all the other silly ones in the past?
Yeah.
And this one is like, make it a big Fast and the Furious action movie, but also have everyone play it seriously.
Okay.
Like, it's not played silly. It's played, obviously there's funny moments, just like in any movie, there's these little funny jokey moments. But it's done seriously.
It's interesting.
It looks fun.
It's directed by Jake Kasdan. Yeah. I don't know if you know who his father, Lawrence Kasdan, is.
The names ring bell.
He's the co-writer of The Empire Strikes Back.
Okay.
So like a really fucking great screenwriter. And then he wrote The Force Awakens as well. He was brought back with J.J. Abrams.
The dad or the son?
The dad.
The dad.
Yeah, then his son, Jake Kasdan, is directing this.
Okay.
Interesting.
Then the other one that is worth mentioning now is something I've seen in this release schedule. It's coming at the end of the year, which is a Lord of the Rings movie.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah, The War of the Rohirrim.
Yeah.
The anime movie.
And so for me, I didn't know much about it.
Yeah.
And I was like, surely we would have known if it was this kind of big live action official Lord of the Rings movie.
Yeah.
But it's animated.
Mm.
It's like it's an anime style animation.
Yeah, they released the trailer last week.
Mm. Yeah, so that's what we got.
Fucking
we got
incredible.
Shown more of it's. What do you make of it? Because Cole, you're an anime watcher. You're a Lord of the Rings lover.
Yeah, so it's set like in Rohan.
Okay.
I was about to say in the Rohan.
In the Rohan.
In the Rohan. In the times before the Lord of the Rings. So it's like 1,000 years before or whatever.
Okay.
The Third Age
okay.
or the Second Age. See, this is where I like kind of it's part of my discussion about Rings of Power.
Yeah.
But so it's set in this time before, and it's like this basically this very important battle that's part of Rohan's like modern, in inverted commas, folk history.
Okay. Who was Rohan again?
So remember the horse people?
the horse people.
I'm trying to speak in terms that Russ can understand. So remember in the second film, there was a city on a mountain,
like a mountain in the
middle of a valley.
Yeah.
That's Rohan, the people who ride and tame horses across these plains, in the middle between Isengard and Gondor.
Yeah. Isn't it where Eowyn's from?
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And her brother.
So it's very much like Shield Maiden of Rohan energy.
That old guy that's like sitting on the... And he's been like possessed.
Oh, he's been possessed.
Yeah, and he's like sitting on the... That's... Okay.
Horse people threw me off because I thought they were...
They're all horse people.
Targaryen. No, Dothraki vibes.
Yeah, no. I thought, what's it called where you half horse, half person?
Centaurs.
No,
you say horse people. Oh, but you mean horse people like Leslie. Yeah. She loves horses.
Yeah, exactly. They're all horse people in Lord of the Rings.
But yeah, it's one of those perfect animes. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like perfect proportioned bodies and everyone's got beautiful faces.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting. Once again, it's interesting that something like that's being made in 2024.
Yeah.
You know, that it's not done in some crazy, newer CGI style. It's done in in what looks relatively old school.
Mm.
I mean, of course there's 3D techniques in it, but it feels like a very old
movie. Has anyone watched the animated Lord of the Rings? The old one? I haven't seen it.
It's trash.
It's trash.
Sorry. I'm sorry to the people of the 70s.
I've seen a lot of memes from it. But
the one where he spooks Sam. Have you seen that one? Yeah, it's horrible. No, but it's really interesting because I think what they did is they rotoscoped people for reference.
Yeah.
Or they filmed a lot of footage and then used that to animate reference. But because either they ran out of time or budgets, all the orcs in Moria, and I think at the end with the Anduin Fellowship breaking up scene, is that they're all rotoscoped. So you have this live action animation blend that doesn't look good. IMO. I'm happy it brought some people joy in the 70s as little kids, but we've moved on. It's not good. It's good for the memes, and that's
very
it
for good me. For the memes. I've seen a lot of memes.
Speaking of Lord of the Rings, I don't know if you've seen last week the first three episodes of season 2 of Rings of Power released.
Oh shit.
Mm.
This is the big Amazon Lord of the Rings TV show.
Exactly.
Which they really made a huge splash of for season 1.
Yes.
To the point where it was one of the most expensive TV shows ever
made. It's ridiculous. It's something like $100 million per episode.
And have you watched season 2 yet?
Yes. So I've watched the first three episodes and I rewatched season 1 before this one came
out.
As
you're saying,
we spoke about that. And appreciated it far more on a second rewatch because I think the first time you watch it,
you got too much fanboy expectation and
then also the dialogue around the show has been really shitty. You know, it's kind of taken on, it's weird. Lord of the Rings has taken on the space of being this controversial, pleasing fans, not pleasing fans, Star Wars dialogue. I don't know if you've seen any of that stuff online.
Well, it's just playing into the same beehive. Star Wars and Lord of the Rings will have the same beehive, which is just this whole economy of thousands of different little bees with their own agendas. So what's the show like?
So the show is visually incredible. So I want to say that visually and sonically in terms of music, that's a pretty high bar to reach, right? The one that was set by Peter Jackson and Howard Shore's soundtrack from the first trilogy. And a guy called, I think it's Bear McCreary, if I'm not mistaken.
Bear.
Yeah, his name is Bear.
What a cool name.
It's so great.
Okay.
He kind of looks like a bear too, so he doesn't live it down, which is great. Okay. But makes a score that feels epic, that feels like a fantasy, that feels like Lord of the Rings. Howard Shaw wrote the title sequence. He came back to write the title sequence. And I saw some really interesting things people talking. I don't know if you've seen the title sequence for the series.
No.
It's basically, when you put sand on speakers and it creates different shapes?
Okay. Yeah.
So it's basically a montage of that, but it's got imagery around the Lord of the Rings mythology.
Okay.
And I don't know if you know how the world started in the Lord of the Rings lore.
No.
Which is part of the problem with this fandom. Okay. But anyways, basically the angels, I think Iluvatar or something, was the god of this universe. And then his angels sang to him in praise and created the world through their music. Right?
Okay.
And then there was a dissenting voice who was kind of like the devil in this mythology, who created darkness, and his voice was in dissonance to the rest of the choir. And that's how evil was created in the world of Tolkien. And then in this montage, you see black sand moving in, and a lot of people talking about there's a choir in the opening sequence, so it like visualizes parts of this mythology. Okay. So I think it's like a cool thing to call out because it feels like a fan made that, right? Like someone who knows the world and stuff. But these writers famously didn't get the rights to Lord of the Rings, the Silmarillion, and all the other things because the Tolkien estate, I'm guessing, wouldn't release it to them. So they could only get the rights to the appendices at the end of Return of the King. So there's a whole bunch of stuff they can't mention.
Oh, that's why in Rings of Power Season 1, because I did start watching it, the little people aren't necessarily called hobbits.
Well, so that's interesting. In the beginning of Lord of the Rings, they do mention three kinds of hobbits. You get like hobbits, harfoots, and something else.
Okay.
And these are harfoots.
Okay.
And what you feel like is that they are nomadic, so they travel. And there's like this whole beautiful little subculture that they've built around it where they move. And they're very good at hiding because they're easy prey, right? Okay. So they camouflage themselves the whole time. Okay. And their caravans have like camouflage all over it, and they can blend in really easily.
Okay.
And it feels like it's kind of like a prelude to before the hobbits settle down in Hobbiton, right? Okay. But the season starts is like far more urgent and epic in its pacing than the start of than the whole of season one. Because I think that was a lot of people's problem, and I think I still agree with them. So the pacing is really slow, and it's kind of hard to get into. There are a lot of different characters. There are a lot of different cultures that it like takes the time. Like Lord of the Rings, even as a book, is very slow.
Mm, there's pages of kings and lineages of kings. And
exactly. Okay. And there's like trees and grass, and everyone will complain about how long he will take to describe a tree, right? Mm. And it feels like that in season one. But season two kind of like takes a revelation that happens at the end of season one, which I think everyone knows that's watched. Are you planning on watching it at all?
No, but it's pretend like
so basically I this don't man... I pretend like you don't want to know. Okay, cool, yeah. Because, I mean, it's all over the internet at this point, and it's in the marketing.
Okay.
That this character, Hullbrand, who was a human who befriended Galadriel and the elves, is Sauron. So Sauron was destroyed. Yeah, like
Sauron's
after,
the big bad guy.
Yeah, the big bad guy of this age.
Okay.
And now he's... It's basically the story around how the three rings for the elves, the seven rings for the dwarves, the nine rings for men were created because Sauron manipulated an elven smith into creating these rings and put his magic of control over those rings. So if you remember anything from the movies, that was quite loose, right? You're kind of like, how did he do that? How did he control them? Did he control what they thought? Or how did he manipulate people and then create one ring to rule them all kind of thing?
Okay.
And this gets into the reasons why they needed those rings.
Okay.
Or makes it up, okay? Because that's where a lot of the fans are like, this is not in the appendices. This is not in the lore. And I'm kind of disheartened by it all. Because even like people have been getting into this really cool discourse online where they're talking about stories and how, especially mythologies, how they're passed down from like generation to generation. And he talks about everything except the Lord of the Rings, Tolkien. He writes Lord of the Rings like it's basically there's only one version of Frodo and Bilbo's red book that was discovered that tells the story of Lord of the Rings. And he says everything outside of that is kind of this lineage of information being passed from generation to generation with different accounts it's been reinterpreted across cultures, translated from other languages.
So you have the room as someone else to play with that.
He like establishes this, right? When he talks about the other books in his letters. Okay. So everyone's kind of taken this pure... And what's really gross is that people online, when they talk about Lord of the Rings, they start each sentence by saying, I'm a massive Tolkien fan. I've read the books 100 times.
Yeah.
As if there's this gatekeeping fandom thing. And there are people online who are saying, if you like Rings of Power, you're not a Tolkien fan. Because it deviates so much.
Yeah. No, I don't
and
have
I'm
time
just,
for that stuff.
You know what I mean?
I think you're spending a bit too much time in the forums.
No, it's so hard because you want to talk about the show and how great it is. Okay. And there are people like that are just enjoying it now in spite of the people being shit. Okay. And it's cool. That's becoming more popular. People are becoming more shameless about enjoying it.
Yeah.
Because there is this weird culture of gatekeeping.
So firmly in that camp.
You know what I mean? Mm. And it's like there's a moment when an eagle appears in these first three episodes, one of the great eagles, to like coronate or to, not coronate, to like give its support or verification as an omen to the new ruler of Numenor, which is Aragorn is descended from. So like gets into nerdy waters. Sorry.
No. Drowning.
Drowning in the nerdy waters.
Yeah.
But it just feels like such a fantastic
Is it a big eagle? Is it a massive eagle?
Yeah, one of those giant ones.
You see one of those, spoiler alert, in the anime.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Mm. Beautiful. So it's like, the overall, it feels like there's this broader narrative going on where they're talking about why they should or shouldn't use the rings. Could Sauron have manipulated them? But they need the rings to survive as elves in Middle Earth. The dwarves' minds are being destroyed. They need the power of the rings to sustain their minds, etc., etc.
Okay.
And there's this like kind of love for it, but then on a character level, it gets into the king of the dwarven kingdom not talking to his son because they're both stubborn as fuck, and they have this huge issue, and they don't want to talk to each other because they're like, he's wrong, I'm wrong. And it gets into this like interpersonal space, which is like really good writing. It's like amazing character-driven writing throughout.
Okay.
You know? So it's a lot of fun, and I think it's very well written, and it's beautiful. I mean, like when you talk about $100 million per episode.
Yeah, it shows.
It shows. Like the CGI is like breathtaking.
And this is over on Amazon.
Yes. Okay, and there's like the big thing of this season that we're going to see in the next couple of episodes, because apparently it's revealed in this season, is there's a character that falls from the sky in a comet who's kind of a wizard. It's established at the end he's one of the wizards. And everyone's like, is it Gandalf or Saruman? Because he's a friend with the hobbits or the Harfoots.
Okay.
But it could be revealed that it's actually the bad guy. Like the bad one. Well, not the bad one. He's not a bad one yet.
Okay.
But it's, you know, Saruman the White. So there's like a lot of mystery to be had. And it's so engaging, dude. Watch it. It's like nerdy, but it's fucking fun.
Can we talk about some new television that's out?
Yes. Yeah. Please. Okay.
I want to mention that Only Murders in the Building. Season 4
still saw that, yeah.
has now come out. We've got one episode so far, which is delightful. Okay. I think it's got such a good place in the world, which is this more like nostalgic old school comedy because of Steve Martin and Martin Short. And we've got Selena Gomez, who brings a little bit more of a young energy into this kind of quite old sort of whodunit narrative.
Okay.
And now in season 4... we get the sense that their podcast is now going to be made into a movie or like a bigger production. Could be a TV show. So they now are in Hollywood. But there is another murder, which we knew about at the end of season 3. So
isn't that the premise? Isn't there like a murder every single season?
Okay.
Yeah, and they usually and they have all taken place in the building that they live in New York. So these people have been making this true crime podcast as they then solve the crime. These
people are playing with podcasts a lot lately. A lot.
Yeah. Like. And so these murder mysteries have fallen into the laps of these three unlikely friends. And it's just a great fun whodunit comedy.
Yeah.
And it's just it's cool that they've got one more.
Mm-hmm.
And so season 4 is coming out.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's worth a mention. Then we started watching Chaos.
Don't know about it.
Chaos with a K.
Okay.
It is a new big ass Netflix show.
Okay.
And big ass Netflix.
Big
show.
Ass. No,
that's
like
the genre.
Yeah.
Big ass.
It's huge. It is the world of Greek mythology.
Okay.
In a modern setting.
Okay.
So it's like modern day Crete.
So like American Gods kind of.
Somewhat. Mm. Yeah. 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 So Jeff Goldblum plays Zeus, who's up on Mount Olympus, down on the ground in sort of everyday sort of metropolitan Crete. We've got characters who are all sort of figures of famous Greek mythology. So our main characters that we are introduced in the in episode one is Orpheus, who is in Greek mythology a musician or a poet. So he plays this kind of like pop star, almost like this kind of Chris Martin-esque, very famous pop star. Eurydice is his girlfriend or wife who dies in the first episode. And it's all about him going down into the underworld. But it's played in a sort of fun... It reminds me a little bit of The Good Place. Did you ever watch the Kristen Bell TV show, The Good Place?
Yeah,
it's so fantastic.
Where they're in this like alternative heaven or hell and you don't know.
Yes.
But you know, that someone snaps their fingers and things swap or change. You know, so it's got this kind of fun, fantastical element to it. It's got this kind of boys-like element, The Boys.
Yeah.
You know, where there's this idea of like gods and are the gods real? And how this world is a little different because... it's as if we're sort of still believing in the Greek gods. Mm. There's no kind of Christian or Muslim world. So it's like a sort of a different version of our reality. And so far, so good.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm in.
Isn't the whole premise that, because in the trailer, I shared it on the Discord channel.
Join it.
It's a lot of fun. It's kind of just me and my friend Matt talking to each other at this point.
I'll see
more people getting involved. But basically, the gods realize that they're not being worshipped or feared anymore by men.
Yeah, so Jeff Goldblum, who's Zeus, who's the god of all the gods, feels like a prophecy is about to happen and that everything is kind of unraveling. And there's a big ceremony that would normally have honored him, but it's now it got turned into a protest that said, like, fuck the gods.
Hectic.
And so now he thinks, what must he do to get them to believe in him again? And so he thinks he's got to bring sort of turmoil. There's a lot that kind of is unraveling as it all sort of plays out. Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah,
I'm stoked.
It's interesting. What it definitely is some people involved in the show must have studied or loved Greek mythology and gone, these stories are fucking wild.
Right.
You know, like, this person turned this person into a bee, and this person does that, and this is what this god does, and it's...
And that guy ain't his son. And
Aphrodite. Aphrodite was born from Cronus' semen. It's like wild.
Yeah, and it seems as if these characters in the underworld and the woman who dies and all these people are sort of going to be a part of like a big undoing.
Mm.
And there's this narrator, which is played by Prometheus.
Mm-hmm.
And he's forever sort of stuck on this
on the rock
yeah. being eaten by the crow, you know?
Yeah. Is it a crow?
Or like an eagle.
Okay, cool. I'm just checking.
Yeah, yeah.
They'll be like, "Oh, change the mythology," which is what we must talk about.
No, it's clearly true to that.
Okay.
Yeah. So you obviously know a little bit more than me, but like, you know, one or two of these characters I then started Googling was like, oh my God, yeah, the whole story is about Orpheus going into the underworld to rescue this wife of his.
Mm.
And I don't want to give too much away, but it's
cool.
That's
awesome.
Yeah, I must say, I'm like...
I love Greek mythology. If you are a fan, have you guys ever read Stephen Fry's story of Greek mythology called Mythos?
I've heard about
it. I haven't.
It's really fucking cool. It's like he tells it to you as a story.
Okay, cool.
And it's wonderful. It's absolutely marvelous.
It's him telling the stories of Greek gods.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. All the way from the Titans. And
amazing. And he obviously puts it in a way that you can understand.
No, totally. It's very colloquial.
And that's kind of the point of Chaos.
Mm.
Is you going like, how wild are these stories?
Yeah.
And it's just so boldly refreshing to sort of see this. Yeah. Even though these stories are... you know, centuries old.
Mm-hmm.
There's something quite unique about the TV show where you feel like, okay, I'm watching something new.
Mm-hmm.
I'm watching something different. Like, this is fun.
That's refreshing.
Yeah.
Nice.
Another nice TV show we're watching?
So it's not nice, but I watched, and I really have been dying to speak about it. I've been thinking about even making like a post on Instagram about it. And I've been speaking to a lot of friends just telling them I've seen it, but also please be careful when you watch this show. It is absolutely brilliant. Did I enjoy it? Not at all. It is called Them.
Okay. You like these kind of single word name TV shows.
Us, them.
Now, them from.
From.
Us. You.
For me, it's not so good. It's not so good. But Them is... brilliant. It is a so it's an anthology series. Every season is different story. And the season one, which I just finished, I haven't watched season two yet, is set in the 50s, and it is set in Compton, and it is an all-black family moving to Compton when Compton was still a very white neighborhood.
Okay.
It is beautifully shot, and it is so refreshing as well to have a show. I mean, I know Jordan Peele is doing a lot of that, but I was, you know, watching an interview with the director, and it's so refreshing to have in the lens a very serious piece And in the front middle of the lens is these beautiful black actors. And it's very beautiful and very powerful, incredible soundtrack. But it's basically about this family that moves to Compton, and it's the racial struggles that they're going through in the neighborhood with a spooky twist.
Okay.
So there's
about to say, where does the marigold come in?
Yeah, so it is a horror series. There are some very scary creatures. There's a
it's a supernatural scare.
It's a supernatural scare, but also the people are fucking scary.
Yeah.
So, and the racism isn't kind of like Tarantino's when he shows racism, where it's very over exaggerated kind of stuff.
In your
face,
yeah.
It's kind of like, oh no, this is real. This is what happened.
Yeah.
You know, like burning things into their lawns and stuff. A lot of this stuff is based off of what happened to, a famous black musician who stayed in those areas. A lot of the story, what happens to the family happens to them. And it's got the actress who was in Scott Pilgrim. She played Kim. I can't remember what this actress is called. Allison Pull. And she plays one of the racist fucking hectic people. It was so hard watching it and being like, I hate her. She's horrible.
She's a character.
She's so bad. She's evil.
What is the anthology? So like the whole season is the story?
It's about them. So them being black folk.
But it's not like every episode's different.
No.
Okay, so each series is a different
story.
Where is it available?
It is on Prime.
Okay, cool.
And it, like I said, like it's brilliant, but I did not warn it, and I do want to like put a big like warning that when it says trigger warning in the beginning of the episode, it's fucked. To the point that when we were watching it, I had to take many breaks. It is a hard watch.
Because it's got the horror as well as the prejudice in it. Does that just amplify it?
It's rough. Like I'm thinking of one scene in one episode where it's
Do you feel like it's necessary?
It's important.
And it's
an important
thing. Like, you know, last week I was speaking about The Color Purple.
Yeah.
You know, which is this, I watched the musical of it, but I was just, one thing I sort of wished to stress was like, it felt like it was a very important film that needed to be made by people for themselves, for the story, for the...
I think also if you are like into American Horror Story, it does have that kind of feeling, because American Horror Story is also based off of like folklore and things. And so when they start speaking about the history of the certain ghosts and spirits and stuff, it's about a real city, you know. I mean, not a real city, a real town. You know, the origin story. There's all kind of folklore and based off of something. It's not just random, you know, spooky things. It's based off of something. And I think it is a brilliant watch. Also, just the cinematography is beautiful. Beautiful color schemes, beautifully shot. And the acting is phenomenal. The little girl, wow. I was blown away by the acting. It was.
So this is them.
Them.
On Amazon. Prime. And is Jordan Peele involved in it?
No.
Okay. But you're saying kind of similar to the stuff he's done before.
Who did Paul? T.I. West.
Yeah, Ty West.
Ty West. He does a few episodes.
Okay.
And it's got his style. You can just kind of tell. There's like a scene where the skull's running in a field with a flowy dress. And I was like, this looks like Pearl, and then immediately it's like Ty West, you know.
Nice.
It's nice when someone's got a little authentic signature.
Are we getting Maxine?
No.
Max Triple X Scene, the third part of the Pearl saga.
No, we're not.
Dude.
I asked about it.
Really?
No, it's not coming. It's not coming to South African cinema. It's tricky, I think, because perhaps they've missed the first two. In cinemas. Were they released in cinemas?
I don't know. I don't think so.
No, it's a bit niche for South Africa, I think.
Seth wanted me to ask you if you could screen all three.
Maybe.
That's not a bad idea, dude.
Maybe we could try and pull off something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a bad idea.
I've got a very long list of things that I have been watching, and I know that we can't get through all of it, but on a lighter note, and to go back to my terrible reality show from that time capsule.
What was that TV show that you mentioned?
Flavor of Love.
Flavor of Love, yeah.
Is Rock of Love. Okay. And it's Bret Michaels from Poison, his dating show, same premise Flavor Flav's. Same time, so terrible.
I mean, they're similar sounding names, so they obviously it's the same people doing a series.
And another weird niche-y thing that I've been watching lately is shark documentaries.
Okay.
I've been down this whole rabbit hole of shark. not shark films, because they paint sharks. I mean, I'm a vegan gal, you know, like they paint sharks very negatively, and I don't like that. But these just sharks in the Bermuda Triangle and sharks doing this and shark, you know.
But okay, let's just dial back for one sec. Rock of Love, what's it called?
Rock of Love.
Rock of Love. Where does one watch that?
That you can watch it on Prime as well.
Okay.
I'm a Prime honey at the moment.
Okay, so you seem to be doing a lot of Prime.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the shark documentaries I've all been watching on Disney Plus because of National Geographic.
Okay.
And it's really wholesome-ish.
Yeah.
Sharks are quite brutal, but magical creatures.
One of the highlights of my life was scuba diving with ragged-tooth sharks.
Amazing.
And it was very cool.
Seth and I, I spoke to class and I was like, please, please take me to Durban. I just want to see some sharks. And he was like, no. And then I spoke to Seth and I was like, please, please take me to Durban. He was like, of course. we can go this month. Like, I want to see some sharks.
I think the Cape Town experience could be more sharky.
Have you done the cage thing?
I don't like cages. You can really hurt the sharks.
Oh, right. With the cages. I've seen them go inside, get trapped and move around.
Hurt themselves.
So what's your plan? To go to Durban?
Yeah, it's closer.
And what do you? What's the experience? Do you know?
Well, we were thinking about doing some scuba diving. Okay. We're trying to find a perfect shark weekend.
Okay.
To just have all the shark experiences that are ethical as well, which becomes harder now.
So I was about to say, because there is that shark marine world.
But then they do the dolphin shows, and those it's not so good.
Yeah. No, yeah. I found myself at one.
Yeah.
Because we were sort of looking for things to do and entertain the niece and nephew. And as the dolphin did a little dive, I was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And they very proudly go like, the dolphin can live this long, but in captivity it lives this long.
Yeah.
And they sort of say it like a fact and you're like, oh, that's not nice.
It's not nice.
It's a lot less.
And I mean, these shark shows are quite, it's about sharks. So it's quite brutal. And there's tagging of their fins and stuff. And you can see that the animal is just not having a good time. So it's a little bit hard, but then you also kind of got to, because they're also doing it for a reason to make sure that they don't go extinct. And
yeah,
find
the
out,
tagging is necessary, you know, in that regard. Yeah.
How to make sure their population continues, especially.
Yeah. We played a game in Japan called Eat Now, Tell Me What It Is Later.
Oh, no.
Which is a really strange game to play in Japan.
Yeah.
But there was one piece of sushi, and I remember going like, oh, this one's good. And I got everyone to have it. And then I said what's this? What is this one? And the woman thought about it.
Oh.
And then put her hand above her head a fin and went, da-da.
Oh.
Da-da. And I was no. And I was like, no. We love our Japanese friends, but let's not forget there's a bad part of Japan.
We can't, yeah.
It's like, that's not good.
I've been staying though because on Disney there's a bunch of shark documentaries, but I've been staying very far from shark films. Although I have been feeling like watching Jaws. Even though Jaws is the outcome of Jaws was so bad. People were just
it was terrible
killing.
For sharks. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was wow, it caused this huge panic.
Yeah. And sharks.
People were, it was this thing where randos were going into the sea to kill sharks.
To kill sharks. Yeah. It's really, it's
you can
not
imagine
good.
One of the sharks being we're fucked now, boys.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And they don't, the thing about sharks is I'm so sorry. I've been obsessed. I've just been spitting shark facts. I went into the studio and I was like, hey, Chris, did you know that a cookie cutter shark? And he was like,
what is the fact? What is the cookie cutter shark fact?
So the cookie cutter shark is a very interesting shark.
I've never heard of that kind of shark.
It's a very cute name, but it basically latches on. It's got quite a round mouth and leaves this cookie almost.
It's like a cylindrical shape.
Yeah,
okay, like a cookie.
You see them in whales and sunfish.
You see this perfect circle that it goes
and it just takes out a yeah. circular chunk.
And it mostly brutal, hangs dude. Out in like trenches and very dark places because it's got really good vision, like underwater, like night vision. So that makes it so much more dangerous that it can just...
It's just
that's yeah. so crazy.
It's so cool that you've gone down this little niche.
I'm obsessed with sharks wormhole. At the moment.
It's so funny. For me, that's like construction videos. Mm. Something about them like just calm me yeah. and like... I just find it interesting when it's like big infrastructure projects, you know, amazing. And we're building this tunnel in Norway
great,
or we're like
great.
Building this bridge and this is what we need to do. And it's like, I was like, oh my God, I find it so interesting.
Yeah.
Lovely, guys. I think that's it for today. I think that's a lovely day. Is there anything else anyone wants to thank you guys?
Thank you.
That was a lovely day. Marigold, it was lovely to see you again.
Likewise.
Kolsky.
Yeah.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, dude. See you around.
See you around, man. We'll see you guys at Beetlejuice.
Yes.
Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. But yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for listening. And our home base is thevideostore.co.za, where you can see links to all our different social media. So please chime in. And as Cole mentioned, there is a Discord that we are growing, especially as I learn more about Discord. But yeah, let us know if there's anything that you've watched that we should be chatting about. But yeah, we'll see you again soon.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Bye.